Don't you think it stinks?
Yes. Yes, it stinks.
Why don't you put it out for us? Well, why'd you do that? It's 12 floor.
Lady sure got some nice melons, Beaumont. I bet she's got some other nice melons, too.
I don't have any parents. It's only me and my grandfather.
Lisa, I can't go to the police. I'm involved in a murder.
Who did this? Who?
The other one. He said he'd kill me if I told.
Why would he kill Lomax? He must be crazy.
Lisa, is there any place we can go and talk and not be seen?
We'll give your grandfather a real good TV show to watch.
Hi, this is Larry Zerner from Friday the 13th, Part 3, and you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
Welcome back to the show. This time we're going back to the mid-1970s with Axe, a.k.a. Lisa, for a nerve-shredding experience, perhaps asterisk. Eric, this was your choice, wasn't it? Was it? Did you choose it for any particular reason?
Oh, no, nothing at all to do with the fact that it was 65 minutes and all the background was laid out for me in a book by Stephen Thrower.
Ah, okay. Well,
nothing at all to do with those facts.
Well, thank you. Well, we'll see. We'll be seeing if we're thanking Eric a little bit later. But you're doing okay?
Yes, I am in the countryside in the middle of nowhere on my own in a huge big house with three dogs.
Ah, well, that sounds like the start of a horror movie.
It does. It gets quite spooky here at night because the road is about a kilometre away, so I really am in Friday the 13th territory here.
So you're just dog-sitting, are you?
I am, and in the spirit of Sorority House Massacre, I'm eating everyone's ice cream. They're going to come back and there's going to be no ice cream in their freezer left. I can't help myself.
Well, you have to be paid in some ways, don't you, Eric?
Yes.
So, oh, I'm glad to hear it. Well, hopefully you'll survive the night. And Nathan, how are you doing?
I'm doing fairly well. Okay. You may call this day Nathan.
Ah, it's a public holiday.
Yes, I wish it was a holiday.
Well, it's a Sunday, isn't it? So isn't it a holiday? Or do you want
I mean, I want my Nathan Day to be an official holiday. I don't want it to just fall on a Sunday because that's boring. I need it to fall in the middle of the week. So I'm changing the day.
Okay.
A Friday or a Monday to make a three-day weekend.
That will work. That will work.
That would be perfect. And, of course, when you do finally get to meet the Queen, because we found out that perhaps you have ties to England in your heritage, so you're one step closer to being knighted by the Queen.
I'm getting there.
You're getting there. So, I'm glad to hear it. And Joseph, how are you doing?
Good.
Okay. A man of few words. Hopefully have a few more words about Axe, a.k.a. Lisa. Sure. Lisa. It's going to be interesting to see if we break the Axe curse, isn't it? From the Axum episode, which is the one that nearly broke Eric.
Well, this one nearly sent me jumping out 12-story building. So.
Well, I thought it's slightly ironic that Axum nearly broke Eric and then he chose Axe.
Yeah. Why are you doing this to me?
Okay, well, let's have a quick chat about what we've been watching recently. So, Man of the Hour, Eric, have you seen anything recently?
Well, we've got a lot on our plate with top threes and commentaries, so we've been working on them. I have seen one film, though. I saw Knife of Ice, which has just been issued on Blu-ray by 88. Yeah, it's 88 films are brought out on Blu-ray. A really handsome little package, but enough about my bits. No, it's really good. It's a really good film. It's Carol Baker. She plays a mute woman and people start dying around her. And it's not a particularly gory film. It's the mystery, the reveal at the end is quite good, I thought, because I didn't see it coming. And there's a great commentary track on it by our friend Nathaniel Thompson, isn't it, from Mondo Digital. He does a great commentary track with Troy Howarth on it. There's some great extras, a nice little booklet and everything. The film looks amazing as well, because this is one of those hard to find giallos for quite a long time. It was kind of like there was this and Death Laid an Egg, and they were, you know, to find them, you'd have to get a sort of 17th generation VHS from Greece or something to see them. But now they're both in spanking new Blu-ray editions, and they look great. Knife of Ice isn't particularly scary. It doesn't have the giallo thrills of something like Deep Red or even Eyeball, which, because this is an Umberto Lenzi film. But it certainly is well worth a look and very interesting. It's more along the lines of A Quiet Place to Kill, that sort of end of the giallo spectrum. But I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Excellent. I haven't seen that one for a number of years, but the only thing that puts me off rewatching, isn't it, start with a very kind of gory bullfighting sequence.
Yes, there is. There's a horrible, horrible, totally unstaged bullfighting sequence that shows you the bullfight from start to finish, basically, which I've never seen a bullfight before. So this was kind of new to me all I knew was that the bull ran into a red cape. I didn't know anything else apart from that. And this sort of informed me of what bullfighting is. And yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, so that's going to put me off rewatch. But thanks, Eric. That's good. Our friends are at 88 Films doing the good work of bringing these films back. And hopefully we'll have some announcements that we can make soon about who we're working with on some new slasher commentaries. But before we do that, Joseph, anything you've seen you want to tell us about?
Yes, from Nathan's recommendation, I watched a movie called Run, Hide, Fight, which came out in 2020, and it's sort of a low-rent Die Hard clone with the unfortunate task of pitting John McClane, or in this case, a teenage girl version thereof, against a group of live streaming school shooters. So, right off the bat, you have a rather tasteless premise, but for me, that's not the film's biggest bet noir. Rather, it has the gumption to kind of tee off from such a premise as blandly as possible. I mean, if you're going to have the stones to touch on a sensitive subject, you know, like school shootings, you know, at least make it interesting. Of course, anyone who knows me knows that I have nothing against Die Hard clones and even think more than a handful rival the OG formula. But that shtick seems to be this film's only crutch, and it's kind of handled with all the, I guess, aplomb of a wet loaf of bread. I mean, character motivations are very murky, and the film relies way too much on illogical plotting to be of any lasting interest, even as a brainless popcorn kind of film. But, you know, since it also has that school shooting storyline, it concurrently runs the risk of pissing off a lot of people, you know, should it not take the conceit anywhere meaningful, and this movie doesn't. I mean, it's got some great acting, to be sure, and there's an idea for an interesting thriller in here somewhere, but this feels like it was written by a 17-year-old gun fetishist rather than a competent screenwriter. I mean, I learned after the fact that it was produced by the Daily Wire, which is that kind of right-leaning online publication. So that may go a long way in explaining the film's mindset and competency. But I don't know. I just wasn't interested in this from start to finish. It's a good idea, you know, taking the school shooting into account there. But I don't know, it just wasn't done very well, in my opinion. Did you see it, Nathan?
No, I haven't seen it.
Okay, yeah, you're not missing much, honestly.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I intended to watch it, I just haven't had a chance yet, and I watched some other stuff instead, so.
Okay, well, that's all I've seen this week, Justin.
Okay, well, talking of Nathan, what about you?
I've watched three things. I actually have a decent recently seen today. First, I watched that new Kevin Bacon slasher set at a gay conversion camp called They Them or They Slash Them. And, you know, and Kevin Bacon is really good as the camp leader who starts off seeming very friendly and personable. But as the movie goes on, you start seeing his dark side and how evil he can really be. I think my biggest problem with this movie is that it's almost like the slasher stuff is shoehorned in. I feel it's marketed as a slasher, but to me, it's not a slasher because for the first, like three quarters of the film, there's not much slashing going on at all. I mean, it's mostly about the kids at the camp and what they're going through. I'm like, to me, it felt more like a drama about them dealing with this like psychotic head of a camp that was like trying to make them do like terrible things and using like electroshock therapy and stuff like that. The slasher stuff doesn't really kick in until like the last 15 minutes of the movie. So It's difficult for me because I feel like if you're going in looking for a horror or slasher movie, you're not going to really like it that much because it's not the horror elements are not handled very well. But the movie altogether, I enjoyed it. I mean, I liked all the characters and I was curious to see where it was going to go. I did guess the killer correctly, so I was actually very proud of myself for that. Have you guys seen it or heard of it?
Heard of it, but haven't seen it. It's just been released, I think, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
I've seen it hasn't got very good reviews, so I was kind of more curious to see it than I am now, but I'm sure I will get around to it.
I mean, I don't think it deserves the like 3 out of 10 it's got on the IMDb. I think a lot of people watching it probably got angry that it's not really a slasher, even though it says it is. I feel like that may be where a lot of the ones come from. But yeah, I mean, it's not a bad movie, but I'm like, I would have had the killer throughout the whole film.
It seems a bit wrong-headed, doesn't it? I think it's the fact that they have promoted as a slasher movie and obviously kind of Kevin Bacon's return to summer camp. So because this is the first time since Friday the 13th. So it seems a bit of a missed opportunity not to sort of, you know, give an audience what it wants.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's it. They just didn't give the audience what they wanted. I mean, to me, they should have either just cut out all the slasher stuff altogether and just made like a drama film about it, or they should have made it an actual slasher movie. You know, one or the other.
Yeah, well, that sounds well. I'm sure we'll catch up with it sometime soon. So thank you, Nathan. You said you saw a couple of other things as well.
Yes. I also watched the newer found footage movie Dashcam. And it's basically about this live streaming girl who gets, offers to give a ride to this elderly woman who is very strange and odd. And then it turns out she's not exactly what she seems. And it's got some really good jump scares in it. It's got some like crazy moments, like, very like good gore. I thought some of the gore was really good. To me, the downside to this movie is they basically have one of the most unlikable heroines I've ever seen in a film. She is, I mean, have you guys heard the term Karen?
Yes.
She goes into stores and with the sole purpose of causing a scene and annoying other coworkers. And she's very obnoxious. And there's never any moment for me where she kind of has a look at herself and is like, you know, this is not who I want to be. I mean, no, it's just you're watching a very obnoxious, like just person that you probably would want to kill yourself dealing with this, crazy woman in her car. And I'm like, I was fine that the crazy woman just killed her. So that really doesn't help for the movie, I guess. It's hard for me when you have a very obnoxious person that we're supposed to follow because I wouldn't want to spend any time with them. So why am I wanting to spend an hour and a half with them? Even if they are getting, terrorized and stuff like that. I don't know. I was just kind of meh about it. If I'm honest.
We don't have Karens over here. They're called Erics. But has anyone else? I've seen it. What about you?
You dirty whores. I hate you, whore.
Have you seen Dashcam?
Who, me? No.
No, too busy playing sound clips. But what about you, Joseph?
Yeah, I started watching this about a month or so back. And, like Nathan, I got about 20 minutes into it. And I just couldn't take the main character anymore. And I have not had an interest to go back to it. And, that's a shame because I love, I like a good found footage film. But this wasn't doing anything for me. So, I'll skip it.
I can't remember for you because I've seen it. I can't remember if I mentioned it on the show.
I don't remember.
I don't remember you mentioning it.
No. Okay. Well, I did see it a while back, a month or two back, and I can pretty much concur with everything you said, Nathan. I kind of did make it all the way through, but because it's by the same director did Host, wasn't it? The kind of like the COVID lockdown Skype sort of a kind of found footage type movie, which was pretty entertaining. This I thought, again, to say what you said is the lead character is so unlikable and so shrill and just, a real pain to be, you just wouldn't want to spend any time with her. And also the film, it's kind of one of the things with a film like, I don't know, like Grave Encounters or something, those where they kind of they start off kind of sort of slow and sort of build to some tension, and then they just throw everything but the kitchen sink at it towards the end. And it's just so much going sort of, and you've got the shaky cam running around and everything's flying, when, you know, plates are flying across the room, everything's just like exploding, and there's just like lots of nonsensical images popping up. It's like a more like a kind of a fairground sort of ghost train rather than a kind of a, you know, a movie.
Or like Axe.
Exactly like Axe. It's just not, once it hits the hour and 6 minutes point, then it just doesn't stop the excitement of those credits rolling. So but anyway, we'll come on to that shortly. So but Nathan, you said there was one other thing.
Yes, now the third time was a charm. I watched a movie from 1978 that could rival the likes of Halloween. It's called Mardi Gras Massacre. And it's about a killer at Mardi Gras that's like going after women, mostly prostitutes. And he goes into a bar and he's like, who is the most evil prostitute here?
Justin.
So they point her out, and then he takes her back to his lair and sacrifices her. The effects are hilarious. I loved it. I thought it was so funny. The dialogue is ridiculous. But yeah, the effects is you get a close-up of this torso that's very obviously fake, and the killer cuts into it and rips the heart out, and it's like that's the death scene for all the characters in this movie. It's the same thing. It's he goes to pick up a prostitute, takes them back to his place, sacrifices them, wash, rinse, repeat. Then you've got these bumbling detectives that are trying to track him down. And I mean, it's just it's all just ridiculous, but it's late 70s and it's just fun. And, you know, unlike something like Dashcam, I don't necessarily find any of the characters to be unlikable. I think they're just fun to watch and see what happens next. And yeah, so I quite enjoyed Mardi Gras Massacre. It's a slow movie, but, you know, I don't know if it's as slow as other films that we're going to be discussing, but I still liked it just from a very cheesy point of view. Don't go in expecting a slasher. It's not a slasher.
Okay, I've never seen it. I mean, I've always been tempted. I know there again, it has in common with Axe that it was a video nasty in the UK. Even though now looking back at it, it seems patently ridiculous. But yeah, it's kind of one that's piqued my interest, and I think one day when I'm feeling particularly masochistic, I'm sure I'll give it a go. Although, of course, you wouldn't say it's not a slasher movie, so it's not one you could pick for the main show.
I mean, I guess you could shoehorn it in, but to me, like I said, he goes and picks up a prostitute, takes her back to his place, ties her up, cuts into a fake torso, and rips out a fake heart. I mean, that's really all there is to it. There's not a lot of stalking or, you know, just classic stuff I love in a slasher movie.
What about you, Eric? Have you ever had the pleasure?
No, but, I would be willing to give it a whirl at some stage, I think. Anything with Massacre in the title.
Well, of course, yes. And what about you, Joseph?
Yeah, I saw this on VHS a long time ago, and I think the box art is probably the best thing about the movie from memory. But the way Nathan is describing it, it sounds interesting. Of course, Axe sounds interesting as well, but here we are.
Well, fair enough, sis.
I think we've already reviewed Axe, haven't we?
Yes.
What about anything else, Nathan? Or was that your...
That was my three for this week.
Okay. Well, I've not watched, like Eric, who's kind of been a bit chock-a-block, and I've got family here at the moment, so I'm sort of filling my time as a tour guide. But I did catch, we haven't recorded for a little while, so I did, we lost our internet one day because we live in the middle, like you at the moment, Eric, we live in the middle of countryside, so sometimes we get outages. So I said to Stuart, well, I'll have to watch something on Blu-ray, which filled his heart with horror. With our friends again at 88, I kind of, a film I hadn't seen before, and I'd got ages ago and hadn't watched it. It was Killer Crocodile. The kind of silly sort of 80s Italian sort of ripoff of Alligator, coming sort of quite a few years after that movie. And it's, I think it's the director Fabrizio De Angelis. And it's just kind of exactly what you would think. It's kind of really sort of cheesy, sort of monster, giant monster movie, sort of crocodile, sort of picking off people one by one who are out on the boat, kind of environmentalist sort of, and lots of cheesy dubbing and dialogue. And it's got Van Johnson, who was one of, he was kind of like a big sort of, like a biggish kind of musical star back in the 1940s. And he plays like the evil mayor. It's just a lot of fun. And unlike a lot of those kind of Italian movies from before that time, the sort of jungle set ones, it hasn't got any real animal stuff in it. So it's all kind of very much this kind of puppet in the water chomping down on Italian actors and actresses. And in some scenes, it looks, the crocodile looks like it's about 15 stories tall. And in others, it looks like a toy alligator about 2 foot long. So have any of you had the pleasure?
Yes, I have that Blu-ray as well, because it comes packaged with, well, the one I got comes packaged with Killer Crocodile 2 as well. I brought down a few Blu-rays with me to watch this weekend if I had time, and Killer Crocodile is one of them for some reason. I bought this 2.5 years ago. I think it was just before lockdown. I bought that and I watched it then and haven't seen it since. I do remember really liking it. I can't remember a huge amount of the plot particulars, if there is a plot. I remember it being fun. And as you said, it's 1989, I think. So it's well past the horrible jungle cannibal movies of the 70s and early 80s. So it's kind of safe to watch.
Yeah, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think it made it back to back with Killer Crocodile 2, and I think it's got some of the same. Well, the surviving cast turn up in that as well. So, it's a fun. It's just, you just have to disengage your brain.
My brain is constantly disengaged.
Well, we know that. Yes, and Nathan and Joseph. Well, Nathan, have you seen Killer Crocodile?
No, but it sounds like something I would like. I do like alligator.
Yeah, it's not quite up there with alligator. It does have some great moments where there's this hunter goes, who's the tries to kill the giant crocodile, sort of jumps through the air and lands on top of the crocodile and kind of surfs it for a while. So it's very silly stuff like that. But if you're kind of, I'm sure that's kind of stuff that you would enjoy.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff I love. But also really like alligators and crocodiles. I think they're real cool. They have big mouths.
They certainly do. Sharp teeth. And sharp teeth.
Sade has a big mouth as well.
Probably not sharp teeth, though. Although no. We don't know. I haven't seen a smile recently. So, Joseph, have you seen Killer Crocodile?
I think I have. I saw so many of those crocodile movies in my youth. It's kind of like the Asian horrors. They all kind of blend together. So I probably have, but I don't remember anything about it if I have.
Okay. Well, can you see we're trying to hold off talking about Axe, but it's unfortunately we have run out of things to say. So let's to give you a taste of Total Terror, here is the trailer for Axe. And then Eric, you'll bring us back in after this.
Not since the Texas Chainsaw Massacre has the screen delivered terror like Axe. In 1971, they rampaged throughout the South. They played a game of William Tell, a killing spree that ended here, where they met Lisa and took what they wanted. The sharp edge of suspense slams hard into fear, and fear becomes terror.
That's more like it, baby.
Pretty Lisa took an axe, gave her captor 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave his partner 41. Axe will slash out and shock you beyond anything before. Axe.
Three demented killers, Steele, Lomax, and Billy, hide from the police in an old farmhouse occupied only by a tender young girl and her invalid father, grandfather, I should say. The innocent girl, Lisa, finds herself the object of the savage brute's sordid desires. Thus, the axe comes into play and the blood starts to flow. At last, total terror. Axe! Yes, axe. It's a, as I said, it's a sparse 65 minutes, including very long opening credits and quite long closing credits, considering only about six people worked on the film. At once, it's kind of a very straightforward piece of schlock, while simultaneously being quite oddball. I mean, we've dealt with many films on this podcast that have that can barely be described as having a plot, but this one is particularly threadbare. The plot's almost non-existent. It's kind of more of an idea than a plot, really. It's part crime movie, then moves into kind of home invasion territory. And it has the slightest of slasher touches, I suppose. I mean, to be honest, the slasher element is so tenuous that I wouldn't have included this film on the main show myself, except that it's reviewed on Hysteria Lives.
Don't blame me.
I am blaming you. With the opening of the film, it opens with these three criminals who we kind of follow throughout the film, and they're waiting for some accomplice to return home. So they can bash his brains in with a doll, apparently. And now the victim of this is gay, and we know this because he wears really colourful shirts. And one of them is so distraught at the violence that he jumps out the window, as we were mentioning earlier. You'll notice immediately how drawn out every single shot is and how each scene is just milked. And just how much shaking tambourines and bongos there is on the soundtrack, just constantly in the background. It just seems to be kind of on a loop almost. I mean, I was joking that this was possibly directed by Michael Bay at the start, but this truly is the anti-Michael Bay when it comes to filmmaking. There are scenes in this that would never make the final cut of a regular movie, but they're included here. Now, and if you've ever listened to the commentary track on the Severn Blu-ray release, you know, they're quite, you know, honest and open that they've just thrown everything they shot into the film to make it stretch to what's barely a feature-length running time. So you get these really drawn-out scenes of Lisa getting herself some milk from the fridge, sitting down, opening the milk, pouring it into a glass, dipping her cookies into the milk. And then the scenes of her applying shaving foam to her grandfather, as if she's about to shave his beard, but then she just wipes the shaving foam off. And, you know, she has a change of heart. I mean, what the hell? We get one scene of the criminals cutting his toenails, which, you know, has to be a first for a slasher movie. Even the action scenes are kind of, like, drawn out. Like, there's a scene where Lisa and Steele are struggling. They're having a kind of fight, and Lisa is trying to reach out for the axe, which is by the fireplace. And the scene goes on for about 2 minutes, which sounds short, but believe me, when you're watching a film, 2 minutes is a long time to have to be, you know, intercutting scenes of shuffling feet, a hand reaching for an axe, not quite reaching the axe. And it seems like it goes on for almost 20 minutes. I mean, technically, the film is quite laudable. It's shot on 35mm, and that Blu-ray release from Severn looks amazing for what is a 50-year-old grindhouse movie, I suppose. But for me, its charms are kind of limited. Its threadbare script really lets it down for me, because there's no real plot and there's no twist of any kind. There's no urgency of anything to it. I mean, if I was being kind, I'd say there's kind of a dreamlike quality to the film, although it's not surreal enough and it's not wild enough like, you know, we always go back to Doris Wishman's A Night to Dismember as an example of how to do this kind of plotless slasher movie in a kind of hypnotically psychedelic way. But this isn't it. There's nothing wild about the film to warrant repeated viewings for me. I mean, there's some mysterious symbolism thrown in involving broken eggs. Could it be just a very straightforward representation of Lisa's fractured psyche? I don't know. I mean, and I suppose if you're looking for undercurrents, we're never told why Lisa's parents are no longer around. You know, I kind of wonder if we're invited to question this. Has she killed her parents? Is she the cause of her grandfather's catatonic state? Maybe I'm giving them too much kudos by pondering these elements. I don't know. There are a couple of things in it that I thought were quite good. I mean, the scene in the store early on in the film where they do that kind of William Tell routine with the cashier was kind of fun and had a witty punchline as well. And where Lisa is cutting into Lomax's neck with the razor was quite grisly, I thought. Although the blood is very much of that unrealistic bright red variety that was commonplace in this era. if you think of the blood effects in Dawn of the Dead, which I think Tom Savini called melted crayons, that's kind of what you're dealt with here. So yeah, the film is slow. Very, very, very slow. Even at 65 minutes, it's very slow. I mean, there's a certain time capsule appeal to it. But I think for me, I mean, I was mentioning Stephen Thrower earlier. He waxes lyrical about this film in his book Nightmare USA. And it's fine. I mean, horses for courses. I don't see what he sees really in the film. I do think it has a one-time watch appeal. But beyond that, no. I mean, it needs a beefier script. You know, even Friday the 13th at its most lazy has a much more layered script than this. This is like the shooting script for Axe was obviously a pamphlet. Everything, as I said, is just so drawn out. And so there's no repeat viewability to it. So it's a kind of a curio for me rather than an essential watch. And it made the Video Nasties list, as we said, which I don't see. I mean, I'm presuming the version I'm watching is completely uncut, so I don't really see what the issue was, apart from maybe that scene with Lisa digging the razor into Lomax's neck, maybe. Apart from that, nothing terribly offensive in the film at all, apart from its very, very long, drawn-out, boring scenes of eating soup and watching a television that constantly flickers. Yeah, so not a strong recommend from me, I'm afraid. Nathan, if anyone is going to like Axe, I think it's going to be you.
Well, I mean, I definitely understand what you're saying. I still like Axe. I thought that the scenes, you know, in the beginning in the guy's apartment, when they torture him, I thought those were good. And the scenes at the convenience store, I find the first half more, entertaining than the second half. Cause it's like, once they get to Lisa's house, there's just not a lot, like you said, there's not a lot of action, or suspense or anything like that. But you know, the movie does use one of my favorite murder weapons, which is an axe. So I like that. And the characters, you know, they're pretty despicable. So it's, you know, I guess it's good to see them get their comeuppance, you know, in the film. But I think, you know, even though I do like the film, it's definitely not a rewatchable one for me because of what you have said. I mean, a lot of the scenes are drawn out and it just feels like padding just so they can make it feature length. And I'm, you know, I was just like, maybe if they'd thrown in a few something else, you know, just kind of, you know, keep the pacing going a little bit faster, it could have been, you know, better. But as it stands right now, I do like it. I just felt that if it had been a little bit faster, it could be more rewatchable. I liked the scene where the scene where she hacks up one of the characters with the axe and it's like splattering all over her grandfather and the TV and stuff. And I thought that was, you know, a fun scene. And I thought the cops at the end were a little trigger happy. I mean, you just see somebody running out of a house and spoiler alert, you just see somebody running out of a house and then you just shoot them.
Well, he had a beard and out of control hair. So he's obviously a ne'er-do-well.
Yeah. They just knew just by seeing him like, oh, yeah, he's evil.
One of those hippies that you read about in the papers.
And the character of Lisa, I mean, she's okay, but she doesn't have much of a personality. I mean, it's not that I didn't feel any sympathy for her character or anything. It's just that I didn't feel they really went out of their way to try to, you know, give her much of a personality aside from this quiet girl living a quiet existence, killing animals with a axe. So, you know, I mean, overall, it was good for a watch, but probably not something I would revisit soon just because of the pacing.
Which is shocking when it's only 65 minutes. But, Joseph, I think you're probably going to be the polar opposite to Nathan.
Yes, at last. Total tedium. first actual thing out of my mind watching Axe was that hoodlum standing by the window looks like Bob Ross. And I thought for a moment the two victims in the opening scene would be treated to a happy little painting, but no, they're beaten with a doll, burned with a cigar, and, you know, like we said, one is ultimately coerced into jumping to his death from 12 floors up, and I envied him. It's a rousing way to start the movie, to be sure, but I don't know, Axe, for me, felt really ugly and uninteresting, despite being so 70s that you could smell the grime and nicotine through your screen. And these three criminals, I mean, they go out of their way to remain as conspicuous as possible with that one ridiculous scene where they destroy the produce section of a convenience store and then they use the clerk as target practice. I mean, they're obviously, you know, I guess they don't care if they get caught. I mean, you practically can't wait for them to be killed. And yet at only 66 minutes, boy, does it feel like an eternity getting there. Once they get to the house with the girl, there is some fun to be had, you know, watching her, you know, pick them off one by one and watching her grandfather in this catatonic state. As you can kind of imagine the mental gymnastics going on in that poor actor's head, having agreed to this film. You know, I love my low budget sleaze as much as the next person, but it feels like everyone involved here were sleepwalking through their roles. I mean, literally, there's absolutely no oomph. And as I said before, we spend far too much time with the criminals acting like total dicks and very little time watching them die. It's just, I don't know, it's just an ugly film. And I don't mind that sort of aesthetic if the pacing is good. But let's just say we spend more time watching Lisa clean a bathroom than we do on all three murders combined. So yeah, sorry, Eric. The sleaze factor is definitely there, but Axe did little else for me. And it feels like an unfinished film, but maybe that's a small mercy.
You don't have to apologize to me. I'm not a huge fan of the film either.
Okay.
Justin, you gave this a glowing 1.5-star review back in the day on Hysteria Lives.
Yeah, I reviewed this 23 years ago, I think, or 22 years ago. So I hadn't seen it since. But I must admit, I kind of, it jogged some memories. I felt a bit like the grandfather in this film. It's kind of one of my worst nightmares would be to get locked in syndrome and have this on a loop. Everything you said, I mean, it's kind of, I love the 70s ambiance to it. It feels like a movie that was kind of sort of, not put together coherently. I know certainly the original title Lisa Lisa is much more kind of poetic, I kind of guess, and Axe is much more of an exploitation title that it kind of leads you to expect a much more of a, like a gore kind of horror movie. The film was released in the United Kingdom, a California Axe Massacre. So to even though it was made the same year as Texas Chainsaw Massacre, there was definitely sort of, you know, a move to sort of try and push it as a kind of a TCM type movie. I don't know. It's kind of like, it's kind of got a mean spirited, kind of vein, a mile wide running through it, which is kind of off putting, but in the same ways, quite engaging because you kind of thinking, well, where are they going to go with this? But not much happens. It's just not very spirited. And like you say, they're struggling to sort of fill the running time to, you know, really expand it beyond a short movie. So I think that's why the credits run sort of so long as well. They were just desperately trying to get it over an hour. It does have that kind of mid-70s grindhouse charm to it. The gore effects are pretty mild, really. It seems in retrospect now, looking back, why anyone would have got vexed about this movie is just bizarre. There's, you know, as you mentioned, the blood in this. In fact, everything is that bright red, like the tomato soup. It literally, they eat tomato soup, or a character eats it in this movie, and it looks exactly like the blood. In fact, it probably was the blood. They probably used tomato soup for the gore effects. I mean, although it's not explicit in this, I'm kind of guessing that you know, Lisa's meant to be this kind of Lizzie Borden style character, because although she's clearly sort of early 20s, she sort of dresses like someone from a Victorian era. So I kind of guess they were going for that. There were kind of a couple of loose ends I couldn't really get my head around. Who was the guy that was they chased, ran away from the house?
Oh, that was the bearded guy, wasn't it? The third man? Is that who you're talking about, the one who gets shot?
No, well, when they, about halfway through, they kind of chased the man.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. And yeah, I don't know who it was meant to be. I thought that person was going to reappear.
yeah, they just kind of go to get him and they chase this person and he kind of runs around and loses them. And then presumably that's the person that got them, went to the police and got the police to turn up and shoot Bob Ross at the end of the movie. But yeah, I kind of, but you know, my mother taught me if I can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all, which of course is not something I've ever stuck to. But I could probably will be another 20 odd years before I revisit Axe. I sometimes, as much as I respect Stephen Furrow as a genre film journalist, sometimes movies just are bad. And say there's nothing, there's, you know, we talked about it before because we love our kind of, our bad inverted commas horror movies, the kind of trashed in inverted commas horror movies from the 70s and 80s. But one of the things that the biggest crime a movie can make, especially a horror movie, is to be boring. And this is kind of boring. I mean, a film like, you know, I've got nothing against kind of slow moving movies, but something like, say, Messiah of Evil, kind of around this, a little bit earlier than this perhaps, but that had that kind of slow pacing, but it was interesting as well. It kind of kept you captivated. It's an interesting misfire, but I imagine the background stories to it probably more interesting than anything that's up on the screen.
I was reading your review, Justin, on Hysteria Lives, and at the very end it says review originally appeared in the Winter 99 issue of Chaos magazine. Now I'm wondering if when you submitted that review, if they fired you on the spot.
Well, I can't remember. I don't think Chaos magazine's around anymore. I don't think it lasted very long. Yeah, I wish it was more what you can think you're going to get on the tin. And I, you know, certainly back then, and you know, people would promote movies with misleading titles and stuff. And I think, to be fair to the director, like Frederick R. Friedel, he tried to make a movie which was a bit more interesting, but because it was we talked about that, you know, with they them, is that, you know, if you advertise something, then you should be delivering on it.
What are you saying, that this isn't Total Terror?
It's no, I think Joseph got it right when he says total tedium, unfortunately. Yeah. I think it's also because actually the main guys, the three hoodlums, are pretty good in this. I think acting wise they're pretty good. It's kind of let down. I mean, the Lisa herself, the actress, I've got a name to hand, but she's got like a strangeness quality to her, but she's obviously clearly not an actress particularly. She's not convincing, and I don't think she's got like a complete cipher of a character. There's no background to it at all. It just happens to be this kind of kooky, crazy lady in a house. It's a misfire from me. But I think if you are kind of interested in sort of mid-70s grindhouse, then, you know, you can, you know, do the ironing while you're watching this. So that's one for the next Blu-ray release.
Yeah. Or you could jump out of a 12-story window.
Exactly. So.
I kind of made my own stuff up as I was going along watching it. Like, I would see, you know, like the doily on a table, and I was like, I bet that was Lisa's grandmother's. Like, I bet she knitted it.
Wow. I like the way we're sort of undecided of whether Lisa is a good relative or a selfish relative, because if she has done something to her parents, then she's a selfish relative. But she is very good to her catatonic grandfather. Unless, of course, her grandfather doesn't like tomato soup, then she's been very mean to him by only feeding him that.
But it's also kind of strange. Well, not strange. I think the fact is we're kind of led to think that the grandfather is aware, you know, he's scared of her, isn't he? Because he's trying to sort of do all these kind of eye movements. Because there was a similar conceit in the House of Mortal Sin, the Pete Walker movie from the, I think that was 75. With the killer priest, and his mother was kind of bedridden, kind of was unable to move, but she had a similar thing.
So can we talk about that movie instead?
Well, maybe. You might have to pick it at some point. But let's talk some background. So, Eric, what have you got for us?
Okay, well, Bob Ross in the film is actually our director, Frederick R. Friedel. He plays the character of Billy, and he does look very like Bob Ross. What else do I have here? Yes, so he was only 25 when they made this film, and he'd never made a film before. He'd never been on a film set. He had a background as a still photographer rather than movie making, and he freely admits on the, and so did the other contributors to the audio commentary, that they didn't really know what they were doing. So it is very much reflected in the film. So the first day of shooting was his very first day on a movie set of any kind.
It was shot in 9 days in February of 1974 on a budget of $25,000. The location itself that they rented, the farmhouse, cost them $25 to rent. That's not per day, that's in total. It was shot on 35mm film, which, as we were saying, was kind of unusual for a film of this budget and this ilk. They used short ends or leftovers of 35mm film that had been returned to Kodak by, you know, major filmmakers. It was filmed in Charlotte in North Carolina. This is Friedel's first of two films he made. He made another one called Kidnap Coed. And then he re-emerged in the noughties with two more films. One was called My Next Funeral, and the other one was called Bloody Brothers, which is actually Axe and Kidnap Coed edited together. So what they did was, I haven't seen this edit before, but the same actor, and his name is, if I look down here, the same actor is in both films anyway. I'll look his name up in a second. So what they did was pretend that they were twins who both they both embark on fateful crime sprees on the same day. So they sort of edited the two films together, saying that the events were happening concurrently. And apparently it's supposed to be pretty good. Well, not pretty good. It's supposed to be pretty convincing, I should say, that that it works as one film. So that's called Bloody Brothers, and it was put together in 2007. Nothing was planned in terms of camera shots or storyboards, which you might find really hard to believe, but it's true. Only the convenience store section had a kind of rudimentary amount of forethought put into it. Basically, they just turn up, plonk the camera down, and just shoot whatever they felt was right. Friedel says the extended opening and closing credits are embarrassing in hindsight, and obviously are there to bump up the running time. So the credits come up and sort of linger there for maybe 30 seconds for each title card, which seems really strange now in this world we live in, especially on television, where the credits roll by so blisteringly fast that you can't read any of them. Friedel and Lisa Lee, who plays Lisa, or Leslie Lee, sorry, plays Lisa, fell in love on the set, and they were she was separated from her husband at the time, and they had a little thing going on, but she eventually went back to her husband. Boo. The makeup effects on the film were by Worth Keeter, who went on to produce Day of Judgment, and he directed Rottweiler and a zillion episodes of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and also the Pamela Anderson movie Snapdragon that my cousin was obsessed with because he liked Pamela Anderson, and this was the only way he was going to get to see her boobies, because at that time in Ireland, Playboy was banned. So Snapdragon was his movie of choice.
Yeah, Keeter also did the special effects on Death Screams. And, you know, in hindsight, I probably could have gotten an interview with him because he's friends with Kurt Rector, who's my friend now. So I wish I would have done that. Actually, he might have had some interesting things to say about at least the special effects.
He's on the Severin commentary track as well. Okay. I think there's four of them on it. There's Frederick Friedel, Worth Keeter, and then there's the production manager, and I can't remember who the fourth person was. But John Cannon, who plays Steel in the film, went on to be in Scanners, Maximum Overdrive. This received a UK cinema release in 1982 under the title California Axe Massacre, as Justin said. But when it came to being released on video by VRO, it was released under the title Axe, and then became a video nasty. It re-emerged in 1999 under the California Axe Massacre title on VHS. And finally, my last bit of trivia. It's a kind of a sad one. The two guys who did the score, George Newman Shaw and John Wilhelm, they also did the score for Kidnap Coed, which was Friedel's other film. They sadly both were killed in a car accident on April the 22nd, 1976. So Shaw was only 23 and Wilhelm was only 22 at the time. So, yeah, a sad little nugget there of trivia from Axe. So, Nathan, do you have any trivia to give us about Axe?
No.
Joseph, do you have any trivia?
I did, but you actually read most of it.
That's the usual excuse. That's my excuse.
Actually, the only thing that you did not mention was that Worth Keeter did the effects for Death Screams, which is why I piped in there. But the only thing I wanted to mention was that This is another one of those video store things for me where they had the big box and I wanted it so much and they wouldn't sell it. And then the business went out of, well, they went out of business like a few weeks later and I missed getting the box. So yeah, I mean, that's the only reason I would want that movie is for that, that glorious big box. But yeah, that's all. That's all I have on it.
I do like the artwork for the film with just the axe on the cover. I think it's quite effective. Now, Death Screams. Wouldn't it be nice if that was available on Blu-ray with a really sexy commentary track on it?
It would be nice, yeah.
Yeah. Justin, do you have any trivia?
Just a few bits that I don't think you mentioned. I don't know if you mentioned it. It's kind of filmed in North Carolina. And it kind of was on a double bill with The Child, which is kind of similar. I think it was probably another... Harry Novak was the... he wasn't the producer, but I think he bought the movie.
Distributor, yeah, and fleeced them, apparently.
Yeah, that's why they did the Bloody Brothers movie, wasn't it? I was just reading that it was because the director didn't get any money at all after they did the deal. There's obviously lots of shady dealings going on back in those kind of grindhouse days. I found a newspaper article from 1974, from North Carolina, mentioning about Rick Friedel was planning to follow this up with a movie called Night of Mourning, which I don't think happened because it doesn't sound like you could really turn that into kidnap co-eds. But obviously, North Carolina is kind of where the Owensby, the studio was, where they filmed Death Screams and all those kind of early 80s movies. Rottweiler was one of his as well, I think.
Yeah, and Day of Judgment, I think, as well.
Yeah. So I don't think there's anything else. I think the actress who plays Lisa, I think she was invited to do the Severin commentary, but she didn't want anything to do with it. So I don't know why that would be, but that was apparently the case.
I do.
Well, yeah, possibly.
She was scared she might die of boredom.
Well, I saw that they did the they were so green around making this. In fact, I think the director said he admits that he'd never been near a camera before or knew nothing about making movies. He just wanted to make a movie. So in the scenes when the three crooks are driving in the car, they had to do it without sound and post dub it because they didn't know how to record sound in a moving car. So you mentioned the I was surprised actually when I saw the California Axe Massacre released UK screens in kind of April, or it was certified in April of 1982, because that seemed very late in the day. I mean, it's almost 10 years after it was, well, 8 years after it was made. And that was kind of, that was only, and if you mentioned it, it was cut by 65 seconds. Not 65 seconds, but it was cut by, I can't remember how much.
Cut by 65 minutes.
65 minutes, that would, yeah.
Make it a much better film.
Yeah. So it's quite often, though, sort of back in the day, I mean, I don't, you know, I would have thought, I don't know when the VRO released on video was, but a lot of these movies were coming out, you know, a lot of the films that we would be termed in inverted commas direct to video, like 5 years later, did come out on screens in the UK, usually cut quite significantly, and certainly was with this one. Apparently the soundtrack, you mentioned sadly the people behind the soundtrack passed away, but it was done, and forgive me if I'm repeating anything, it was the whole score for the film was done in under 8 hours on a single day. As I mentioned, that Harry Novak, he bought the rights to the movie to distribute it and retitled it Axe. And the director wasn't happy with that. He said he kind of, I think he probably knew the reason that Harry Novak had done that. And Harry Novak was kind of like an infamous distributor back in the day of kind of, lots of exploitation films like Hitchhike to Hell, Wham Bam, Thank You Spaceman, The Sinful Dwarf. He was kind of like a real kind of showman type distributor. So he was kind of mis-selling Axe, unfortunately, because it's kind of thoughtful, slow-moving. It's almost like an art movie in some ways, but it just doesn't deliver on that title, unfortunately. And I said presumably it was kind of based on the Lizzie Borden, the kind of infamous Axe murders from the 1892.
40 whacks with a wet noodle bar.
Yes. So, yeah, that's pretty much all I've got, I think. What kind of reaction did we get on the group, Joseph?
Let's see, 16 comments overall for Axe. And from that, Scott Harn says, I love it. Plays like a fever dream with a hatchet-wielding homicidal Laura Ingalls. A strange atmospheric exercise in mood. Thank you, Scott. And Scanner Force Alpha writes, 66 minutes have never felt so long. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Listen on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and about a billion other podcatchers, both good and bad. We're also on Patreon, and our new tier system is currently underway, which includes our monthly commentary feature. Our first is going to be Friday the 13th, at the end of this month. Our email address for general feedback and boner pills for Justin is thehysteriacontinues@gmail.com. Because you're old, Justin.
Oh, Joseph, how rude. I'm not that old. Well, I'm getting that way. So, thank you, everyone who's kind of signed up to new tier on Patreon. So we're looking forward to doing our Friday 13th commentary. And I've just done an article for Hysteria Lives about the controversy around Friday 13th and the critical reaction to it. So if you want to get a taste of what we might be talking about on the commentary, then, you know, head over to Hysteria Lives. And thank you to anyone who donated towards the hosting costs of the website. Very much appreciated. So thank you very much. So what we may not appreciate so much is this.
It's my joke of the week. It's so pretty fantastic.
Did you know the director of this film wrote the script on a very inexpensive computer? He used his free Dell. His free Dell. Free Dell.
You know, the least you could have done having us watch this movie, Eric.
I only want to be loved.
Oh, Free Dell. Wow.
Took me a moment to get it, and then while I got it, I wish I hadn't.
It was better than the movie.
lasted less time. I was
really hoping it was going to be something Axe-related.
Hmm.
That'd be too obvious, and I'm not about the obvious.
Of course, of course. So, okay, well, we're just about to go and record our Patreon for The Descent. So if you want to hear that, then join us over on Patreon, as Joseph has given all the information. There's also the information on our Facebook group as well, if you'd like to support the show through that. So what are we covering next time?
Yes. Well, I don't know if we're going up or down. I don't really remember the movie that well, but it's a listener pick. From Leo Dean, it's Stripped to Kill from 1987, I think it's 87.
Excellent. Well, we shall look forward to that. I don't think it's a movie, is it Cat Shea directed that?
Yeah, and it's got Norman Fell from Three's Company. He's got a role in it. I've seen it once.
Come and knock on our door.
Yeah, I've seen it once a long time ago, so I'm kind of interested to revisit.
Cool. I haven't seen it before, I don't think. Oh, maybe I have. I'm trying to remember. But anyway, I'm sure I'll jog my memory when I finally do watch it. So, yeah, join us. And Eric will be stripped to, well, whatever.
To Thrill.
They don't call him Eric Thrill Fail for nothing.
No, that's a good joke, Justin.
No, it doesn't even make any sense.
So, okay. Well, thank you for listening. And what are we playing out with, Eric?
Now, this is a song I don't know, but I've heard of the group Lisa Lisa and Cult Jam. See what I did there? Lisa Lisa. The song is called I Wonder If I'll Take You Home.
Excellent. Okay.
I think it's kind of dancey.
It probably is. If it's from Lisa Lisa, isn't it? I would think.
Yeah.
Good. We could use something peppy after that.
Yes. So, okay. Well, thank you for listening as ever. And so we'll be back with Stripped to Kill next time. And also plenty going on, as we mentioned. Hopefully we can announce some of the commentaries. We've recorded
three.
Yes, we've recorded three, and they are all 80s slashers. So, but that's as much as they can give away. But yeah, hopefully we can let you know when they're announced. And we've got some more to do as well. So a very busy time for us.
One of them is a pretty big title too.
Absolutely. Yeah. From the golden era. So, okay, well, let's say goodbye to the good people.
Bye.
So long.
Goodbye.
Bye.